This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
12-year-old Lee Spencer is in the back seat of his family's car as it's pulling up the driveway of the house they are moving into. Lee notices a young girl looking at him from the upstairs window. No one else in the car sees her. This is the beginning of a 4-year journey of Lee Spencer's unbelievable events that happened in and outside of that house. Spencer's Ghosts, available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, any place you get your books. Available in paperback and ebook.
Hello, paranormal fans. This is Mark Drotis, paranormal suspense author. Are you looking for a good scare? Something that will challenge your thoughts about ghosts and hauntings? If so, read The Haunting of Crimshaw Manor and find out what happens when a paranormal club investigates a mysterious haunted house where shadow figures are seen, screams heard, and an undeniable torment is revealed. The Haunting of Crimshaw Manor is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever scary books are sold. And don't forget to listen to Ghost in the Valley podcast with Al Cooley. Both will give you chills and keep you up at night.
Today on the show, I have paranormal suspense author, law enforcement officer, investigator, Mark E. Drotis. Mark has appeared on my show approximately 2 years ago. Back then, we talked about his book, The Haunting of Crimshaw Manor. I'm excited to announce that Mark has a new book just recently released, The Spirits of the Mains. Welcome to the show, Mark E. Drotis.
Thank you, Al. Nice to be here.
I can't believe it's been 2 years?
Wow. Time goes quick. Time goes quick.
Yeah, it does. How have you been?
I've been good. Been enjoying close to retirement time. I think I got about 21 months.
Okay, because I think the last time I talked to you, you were looking forward to retirement. So I was just wondering if it got in there yet, you know.
Just about.
Almost. You're almost there. You're almost to the finish line.
Yes.
Stay safe.
That's the plan.
How's the first book doing? I mean, the last time you're on the show, we talked about The Haunting of Crimshaw Manor. How's that one been doing for you?
Been doing good. I've since the release of that, I've gone to various paracons, met people that have read the book, discussed it. They seem to enjoy it very much and kept asking, is there going to be another story? We love the characters in the first book. And I kept saying, yes, there will be. I will. It's in the works. And it finally came out here in November of 24.
I know I bought the first book, Haunting of Crimshaw Manor. And I totally fell in love with it, man. I love the way you wrote that. It was, it just made me feel like I was part of that team, you know, going into that building, you know. That was really well done.
Well, I appreciate that. That, as I tell people, my goal is to invoke an emotion, a feeling, and I try to write it as if I'm there. Over the past several years that I've been writing with these characters, I joke and say they're alive to me. I've really gotten attached to them and kind of believe that what I'm writing is actually happening to them, which for an author, that's a good thing.
Yes, it is. My first book came out too this past October. And, you know, that's an exciting feeling when you have that book in your hand for the first time, you know. Yes. In my case, it's taken me over 57 years, 58 years to write that book, you know. Show my age here now, but all those years in law enforcement, I imagine you've seen it all.
Pretty much the human condition, so to say.
So with that being said, do you take any of those situations that you've come across in your field of work and try to pepper it into maybe some of your stories one way or another?
I come across a lot of different people, and I have to interact with them from different backgrounds, beliefs, every type. I speak with people who have been victimized, as well as the people who have done the criminal act. So a lot of that interaction with people and that emotion, I do try and remember how it felt and what that person was feeling, whether it was fear, terror, whatever it is, and try to put that down in print when I'm writing. That's helped me. The investigative aspect of the crimes I do investigate, it aids me. It aids me in writing a suspense type storyline, in that certain things need to happen in order to come to the final big reveal, so to say. It's sort of like a mystery story for ghost hunters.
Yeah, you know, the reason I bring that up, because, you know, I think a few years ago I was watching the behind the scenes of Criminal Minds, you know, and I'm thinking of all those outrageous shows they come up with. I mean, my wife says, this can't be for real, you know. Well, it does. But then I was looking at the making of that. They take in like maybe five or six stories and they put it into one. So it's all happened, but it was maybe different stories. And I thought that was fascinating. So I just was curious, and because you're a detective, right?
Yes.
So in your line of work, you got to investigate what's going on. And I'm sure that's why I brought that up. There had to be some twists and turns along the way there that were unbelievable on a few of those cases and all the years you've been in the business.
Yes. Yes. They have at times. One of the things I constantly say, and I've been doing law enforcement now for 30 years, is I just don't understand what they're thinking. It's just really strange that some people think and do the things they do. But that's part of society.
Right. Yeah. I mean, without mentioning any names, can you say any of the bizarre case or weirdest case you've come across during your investigations?
One case I had was there was a love triangle, and the individual was going to kill the spouse of the person he was involved with and make it look like a suicide. That was probably the most involved and interesting, strange thing that I had dealt with.
Yeah, when I was doing my book signing this past October, we have a ghost walk every year in our hometown. Brings in thousands and thousands of people. And I was honored to be there to sign my book. But I kept watching this one cop. He kept eyeballing me, you know. he was assigned for security there. And for about an hour, I told my wife, he's looking at me like he wants to kick my ass or something. I don't know. You know, so finally he walks up to me and goes, he's done so many calls in that same area where my book took place.
Uh-huh.
So he's telling me his stories, and some of the stories were out there, you know, just like my book was, you know, out there. But he says, so everything in your book I can relate to, because a lot of these calls I went on were in your book. And I said, well, that was close to our house. And I was told from the people in City Hall, that area is highly infested with activity, because of Indian burial grounds and other type of burial grounds that these homes were built on.
Oh, wow.
So I was just curious, you know, because he was just one guy that was really intrigued by my story. And said he could relate, you know, on a few of those calls he went on.
Well, I mean, police officers, rescue personnel, we're out there at all hours. And again, we see the worst that society has to offer. And I do believe it's strange when, because I worked in the same district for, geez, for a long time. And as I'm driving, I'm like, okay, I remember that house. I know the deceased person was in that house. You know, and you keep going, but life goes on and people live their life and everything else. And it just comes back to the whole thought process of whether or not there is residual traumatic events that have stayed. If you're around in a single area long enough, you kind of know. It wouldn't surprise me, so to say, that if there is something that lingers in some of these horrific areas.
I mean, what really piqued your interest in going into law enforcement in the first place?
That's a good question. I think it, as corny as it sounds, it was something I could believe in, of helping other people, of pursuing justice for those who've been victimized. It was also the excitement of not sitting and just behind a desk and doing the same thing day in and day out. Those two things really drove me to seek that profession. And I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. It's been a long run. I'm tired. I'm ready to pass the torch. There's a younger generation. Times have changed.
Oh, yeah.
Greatly. And things are just different, which I think is affects everybody. Same thing. Everybody, as you get older, things change and you move on to the next phase of your life.
Yeah, that's a question I was asked. I was on another podcast not long ago and it asked me, why now? What took you so long to write this book? I mean, it's 50-some years, right? I said, well, in my case, when you're talking about growing up in a haunted house, and you being in law enforcement, you would know this. I mean, who do you go to in 1967 to call the police and say, my house is haunted? Or you come up to my house and, okay, what's going on? Well, there's running across the steps, upstairs, you know, but there's nobody here. You know, so really, who do you talk to? Who do you call? And see, like you said, times have changed so much with the internet and everything you have out there. I mean, it's hard to say what's real and what's not, you know, and especially today. So yeah, I mean, times have changed, sometimes for the good, sometimes not so good.
It's true.
Before we get into your new book, in case my listeners missed the last episode you were on a couple of years ago, in a nutshell, what was the Haunting of Crimshaw Manor about?
The Haunting of Crimshaw Manor, like yourself, took me a long time to write. But it was something, a story in my mind that I could write. I had a story, and my interest was there, and I put pen to paper. The story is about the main character, Stephen Davenport, who returns to his hometown after graduating from the university there, Strathmore University, as a paranormal studies professor. He was able to land that job. And when he returns, being the new professor, they decided to give him the great distinguishment of being the advisor to the paranormal club, which is basically what the story revolves around. The club trying to investigate their college students, just like any other paranormal investigation, places of hauntings and things of that nature. So the first book, as the name, the title states, Crimshaw Manor with a historic manor house. And back in, I think it was 1860, I want to say 68, there was a blizzard. And after a week or so, people didn't hear from anybody from the Crimshaws. Went up to the Crimshaw Manor and discovered the entire house open to the elements. Benjamin Crimshaw and his son Jonathan were nowhere to be found, and Elizabeth Crimshaw was found hanging in the foyer of the manor house. Ever since, naturally, it was rumored to be haunted, and it basically was an unsolved mystery for over 120 years that they didn't know what happened. The manor house was eventually saved as a historic home. They never really did ghost hunting or paranormal investigations in the house. The club was able, through accident of circumstances, to go in there over a weekend and discover that, oh yes, it is indeed haunted. And they, through the adventures they have, come to solve a mystery that's been plaguing that area for 120 years.
Now, does this book lead into the new book?
It does.
I'll be right back with the rest of my conversation with Mark Drotis right after these brief messages when we get into his new book, The Spirits of Demains. I'll be right back.
Ghost stories are always scarier when they're told by the very people who experienced them. Hi, I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And we're the hosts of the Homespun Haints podcast.
We talk to people just like you who've come face to face with ghosts, demons, haints, and other strange paranormal phenomena. All of it makes for a chilling good time.
So grab yourself a sweet tea, turn off the lights, and listen to some eerie, true ghost stories on Homespun Haints, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not scared. Are you?
The same characters are there. They're the basis of all my stories. The interesting thing about that was I wasn't going to do The Spirits of Demains. I actually had written another story, but it didn't fit the timing. And as people had said, they said, well, why didn't they investigate Demains? And Demains, I'm sorry for the listeners, Demains is another historic building in the town of Strathmore. It was a furniture cabinetry place. Then it became, for a long time, a funeral home. Up until the last several years, it finally closed its doors. And a friend of Stephen's, comes from a wealthy family, purchased the building to make it into a nightclub. And that is where Stephen is ironically living now, in a haunted funeral home, if you want to say. And so there was a lot of stories there that were discussed in Stephen's childhood that he had spent the night in and seen the Blue Lady, the Shadow Horde, other things that legends arose that old abandoned funeral home was haunted. Now it's renovated. Stephen's living there. And finally, over spring break, they closed the doors, and him and a few of the students from the club investigate what is actually haunting Demains.
So how do you come up with the names of your characters?
That's a good question. And the funny thing is, people who know me close here, they'll say, ah, I know where you got that name from. And it's either something that just sounds good. The town of Strathmore, it just had such a good ring to it that I really like that name. I read a lot. I listen to the radio a lot because I have a god-awful commute. Yeah, sometimes you just hear something, you say, okay, I'm going to remember that. That's a good, or you kind of just play with it as you're thinking. And I write it down. I have to write notes down.
About 3 o'clock in the morning, you get an idea. You got to jump up and write it down because you'll forget.
Absolutely. In the second book, it's funny because one of the main characters, Evelyn, she has what's called psychic dreams. And when she wakes up, she goes to a notebook next to her bed and writes it down. I do that when I occasionally have some really great thought. I'm like, ah. Now, being able to read it the next day, that's the challenge. But those ideas, you got to keep them when they come because we live in a world of distractions.
Right. And I've had a few authors on here, you know, that tell me it's almost the same story. You know, they get attached to their characters, you know, so it's almost like they become family.
Yes.
And when you have to let a character go or say kill a character off, it's a sad moment. You know, I had one girl says, I even ended up crying that I had, but I knew I had to let her go. You don't want too many characters to keep carrying on because then you'll confuse the reader, you know. So I can relate to that.
It is difficult. And for me, it's difficult when I'm writing that I'm trying to keep a semi-balance of realism to the story, of course. And I think at times, oh my gosh, there's no way that the school would sanction this club doing this anymore, or things of that nature. But then again, then it wouldn't be a fun, interesting story to read. So there's a balance there.
Right, and you want to keep it flowing, you know.
Correct.
From one chapter to the next.
The story of domains, the spirits of domains, it takes a little bit more dives into the characters that you know from the first book, gives a little bit more depth to who they are and what they're doing and how they interact.
You're with a traditional publisher, right?
I was. And I've since gone ahead and I'm on my own now.
Okay. Cause I was just kind of curious because I think we talked before you were, and I don't know if they had a, how many books they wanted out of you, or I don't know, or myself, I'm independent. So I tested the water. I mean, and you know, you get a lot of rejection letters and naturally. And my case, it wouldn't bother me to change my story for them if they wanted to change something. But since my story is based on a true story, it meant something to me not to take this part out.
Right.
So I decided just to go independent. Done okay. It's all in advertising and marketing.
Yes. Yes. And I'll always be grateful to my first publisher, but yeah, we just went different ways. It wasn't anything one way or the other. Going the independent road, there's a lot more control, and the timeline of getting things done is much more appealing to myself than waiting and waiting and waiting. But I'll always be grateful for that first shot that they gave me. And who knows? I mean, if things change, might end up going back. But this is all new territory for me.
Mm-hmm. If you get a great offer, you know. As far as book signings go, do you like to go out and meet people?
I do. I do very much like to do that just from the mere fact of talking to people. And I think, and this is a weird thing, I think some people think, want to talk to the guy and ask him about, you know, chapter 7. As an author, I love it. There's stuff that I'm like, does anybody really get that I put that in there for a reason? I've had a couple people ask me questions online. I have a webpage, medrotus.com, very simple. And I enjoy going to the shows that I go to. Obviously, it's my people, paranormal enthusiasts. So to have somebody, a lot of people ask me, they go, is this a true story? I go, no, it's fiction, but it is in what I would say, this is what, you know, the equipment, the tactics, the techniques, the researching, this is what paranormal investigators do. Now, of course, my stories are a little bit more exciting in the sense of being a story, a fictional story, but there is a science behind what they do and what they discover.
Yeah, like in my book, I didn't put their real names. I used like middle names and of their real name, you know. But I didn't put the real last name or, and I had one character in my book where, and these are all real people, that was a classmate of mine back in high school, and he committed suicide. Well, I was at this book signing, right? And a lady came up to me and she said she wanted to thank me for not putting his name in that book. You know, I never did put his name in. I just said my classmate. And here it turned out to be his sister. You know, so you never know who's reading it, who's, you know. I was set back on a few people that came up because they knew the area that my book was involved in. So they knew the area. They knew some of the people. And so that was interesting because I had some authors on here that preferred not to do live book signings. You know, they'd rather do the Amazon sales or whatever. That way they can do it from the comfort of their home. I don't. I think you should get out there and meet the people, see the people that's buying your book, you know, love it or like it. I mean, or hate it. You're gonna have those people out there. So, but it's okay, you know.
Absolutely.
I like meeting people, you know. I just was curious because you said you were at a couple of Paracons. And I think that's where I came across you because I loved your banner when you were at a show and I seen that banner. So that dude is advertising like crazy. I respected that, you know.
I'm going back to that event, as a matter of fact, in May down at St. Albans at Radford University. That's my old college that I went to a long time ago. That's where, if you read in the first book, the author's notes, that's where I had first paranormal encounter in a 100-year-old house we are renting. I like people. I'm honored that somebody's going to read what I've written. My goal is to, as I said before, invoke an emotion. I love it when people say, oh, I got chills when, you know, you're talking about the basement. I had somebody the other day tell me that they got choked up reading about Stephen's father. That means a lot to me. So anybody who's listening to this, come talk to me. I'd love to talk to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Ask questions, you know, talk to you. So is there going to be a book three?
Yes. It's called The Shadows of Creek Hollow. And it's 90% done with the first draft.
Okay.
I was on a roll, and when the second book was being published, I had to take time out and go back and forth and all that, and it stopped my momentum. A lot of writers will understand this. It's, you got to be in the groove to write. I got the ideas. It's just, I gotta be in the groove, and I'm back there. I just finished a chapter. I probably have about three more chapters to go, but I'm shooting now to try and have a book out every 12 to 18 months. And it, for me, if somebody says, well, how many are you going to write for this series, if you want to call it that, I have about five stories in mind.
Okay, that was my next question. Now, you think of like a trilogy, or can it go on from that, or until you're ready to say that's it? You know, thinking you can go to something else, or
I mean, I've had some other ideas floating around my head that have nothing to do with Strathmore University paranormal investigations. That's on hold, but this I've thought along the various things, and in my mind, it's going to take about five books total to tell the whole story.
I like the fact that you have the buildings on each of your books, like Crimshaw Manor has that building on the front. And I noticed on the Spirits of Domains, you have the building on the front. Now, would that building be Domains? Is that what we're kind of gathering what that is?
The publisher that I was working with to put the book together, they presented that. I said, here's what I want. And I wanted the color to be green. I really liked the first book, how it came out. And I was like, okay, let me kind of keep that. I look at that picture. It's close, but it's not. But it's close to it. And again, I think it's a good eye catcher to, hey, let me see what's this about.
That's like the house on my cover. It's not the house that I grew up in, you know, but I liked it because of the windows. I liked in the window and the eeriness of the building and the girl in the front. So I went with it. So what's coming up next for Mark Drotus? What's happening?
I think I'll be retired in 21 months. At that point, I'm going to have more time to write, which will be helpful. I was at one point during COVID, everybody had lots of time. And I was in a groove of writing like from 9 to 11, or at least sitting down at my desk and not being distracted and working on a project. Right now, I'm having to fit my writing time between a lot of things, which it's difficult, but obviously you'll find the time. So I'll continue writing, obviously, but I'm not done. I'll probably do some odd job and enjoy fishing, kayaking, boating, spending the time with my family.
Well, where can people go to get your books?
My webpage, meadrotus.com, has a wealth of information not in the books. It's my little hobby. I keep expanding it and adding, oh, hey, these are pictures that kind of made me think about this scene. Or I think I even have song playlist that reminds me, hey, this song reminds me of this scene in Crimshaw Manor. I have maps in there of domains, and you can definitely, there's links there. You can also go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, most of those places. Right now, Spirits of Domains is out in paperback, hardback, and ebook. And I think on my calendar, I think around April, May, I'm going to try and probably do an Audible audio type book. My sales with Crimshaw Manor, a lot of people do the audio. Yeah, I want people to read or listen to it. So
where can they get like an autograph copy?
Send me an email and we'll make it happen. Absolutely. That's on the first page of my webpage. You can contact me there through that webpage. Just send me a request and I'll be in communication with you. And I'd be more than happy to do that.
Well, I'm going
to
put all your links in the bottom of this episode, and it's been my pleasure having you back on the show, and hopefully if I'm still around in 18 months.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll do this again, you know, on that third book.
I appreciate it, Al, very much. Thank you for your interest, and thank you for getting the word out.
And that seems to be the key, getting the word out. The word is Mark Drotus's links are at the bottom of this episode. Please go check out his books. They are fantastic. I have one of them. That's really, really a great read. While you're at it, check out my book, Spencer's Ghost, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere you get your books. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast.